What we do in a case like this is someone will tell a story like, oh, I know who that is. He does drag. That's Randolph Kennedy. He was had a famous character called Laverne. He's living in Montreal. You can tell some things. Please don't hog the time, but don't interrupt anybody. If you think of a wonderful thing about Laverne, then you're like, don't do that, please. You know, you'll get your turn. And when they've finished, you can say, that reminds me of another story. You might think about another person altogether, or maybe that particular night, or that Christmas, or whatever, you know, or other shows, or even something that's really off in left field. And that's the way we'll do it, hopefully. So what we're just going to do is going to start with Dan, in charge of this, I guess, what do you call it, film collage or picture collage?
It's just a couple dozen photos.
And if need be, I'll ask you some questions, like, what was it like for you the first time you went to the church? Which was no small thing for me. Anyway, so let's start.
So I think that's a great topic for our first thing. Let's start with the first time I walked into this space. And I'll start. The first time I walked into this space, I didn't, because I was 15 years old. Uh-huh. And I walked by it a lot, because I knew that it was the gay bar, and that was kind of exciting for me, and I knew that I belonged there. And so I'd walk back and forth, up and down Barrington Street, hoping to see someone coming in or going out and see what another homosexual might look like. But remember that the DJ booth was in that space there, and you could hear the music and you could see red and green lights flashing in that space out of those windows.
Yeah.
And for me, that was just the most exciting exciting space possible. In fact, I was never old enough to go to that space. The first one that I went to was after it moved. I came of age just as we were building Rumors on Granville Street, which was just a street, one street down from here. And so I got to be part of that. I got connected to the community via Jim DeYoung. And he was part of the work teams helping build the Rumors, helping, you know, renovate the space that we were renting to make Rumors. So that's how I got connected. So the only time I've ever been in this when it was a gay space was for a party, which we have a couple of photos of later on, which I probably can't find. These photos are not in any particular order. But
these are not your photos. They're from the.
They're from a couple of sources.
Oh, go back.
Well, no, I'm looking for. So this is the party. There's Wes and Gabe and a friend.
Yeah.
And this is for a turret reconstruction.
Resurrection
party. I have it dated as 2013, March 2013. And so that was the. The only time that I was in there that it was like a gay space. That's it for me.
I'll tell my story. Introduce yourself, Mike.
Hi, my name is Mike Bellin, and I grew up in Bathurst, New Brunswick. And when I graduated high school in 1977, I chose to go to Dalhousie, and I was a late bloomer. I was 18 before I even had any kind of experience. So I went to university without even really knowing what I was. But about, I think it was either 1978 or 79, I went for the first time to the turret. I thought I died and went to heaven. Yeah, it was like, yay, I'm not the only one. And I can remember the music they were playing was Michael Jackson, Get Down with the Four Stroke. comes up to you again. Yeah. You remember?
Yes.
Yeah, and I was so smoky. And I never did smoke. But yeah, it was just so much fun. You'd have to climb all these stairs to get up there. And on the way up, there'd be this little shop, and they sold those interesting things. Like poppers and dildos. Yeah, so it was a party place, and I was a regular for, I would say, 2 years until I left in 1980. Graduated and moved to an even more fun place, Provincetown, Cape Cod. So, yeah, so that's my memory of the turret. It was like a revelation to me. It's like, now I'm not the only one. Yay! So, yeah, I had lots of fun there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If we go around the room, I guess I met the most people.
Hi.
You want to speak?
Oh, you know, we've been here a year. We come from the United States, so we're going to be learning more than anything.
Okay.
I'm Caitlin. This is Bob.
Where is the
state?
Chicago, most recent.
Tell me, go on.
Hi, guys.
Yeah.
Welcome. So was this a church before? Or just a house?
I'm Robin Metcalf. My pronouns are he, him, except for my feet, which I just discovered are really like women's size 9. So you can adjust them as you heard. It was
a
church.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. There are they anyway.
Yeah. Church of England Institute, built in 1988, and it was 1888, and was used as that for up until the 1940s. So it was a church related institution. And,
well, thank you. Yeah. No, it's just I noticed the windows sometimes, just the shape of the windows, usually you see that in churches, you know.
That's right. And that's what you saw when you first came.
Oh, by the way, I'm Paul. I'm from New Brunswick, an outsider, too. But kind of living in Halifax, too, with my partner, Dan.
Were they abused either the residents brought in?
I don't believe it was...
Or people pre-coming?
I don't know. I think it was more outward-focused.
Yes.
The room on the second floor below this and in the back was a room that came to be called the ballroom, but it was originally, I believe, used as a gymnasium. Not very small, that room, yeah.
And what was attached? Did you say St. Paul's?
It was Church of England Institute, so the closest Anglican church would be St. Paul's. Although it's not the St. Paul's Hall, which is a separate building.
Right.
Yeah. But I also, I had a partner who, whose grandfather had come over as a Bernardo boy, which were boys that were either orphaned or separated from their families and brought over as sort of indentured farm workers, etc. And it was an immigration scheme. And when he got off the boat, he reported to the Church of England Institute, and they directed him wherever he needed to go.
Interesting.
Okay, who else has a... the next, please.
Oh, I stood up and then I sat down.
The next first-time story.
I just took a bite. Go. Sorry.
Okay, I'm Eric. I live in Chester. Now, this is the highlight of my month, every month when I drive in from Chester to the city, to the Elderberry event. My first time in the turret was in 1979. And I had just arrived in Halifax, maybe 3 days before. Now, I'll just say this briefly. You can ask me about it later if you're interested. On a ship from Morocco. I was in Morocco on a beach smoking hash. I got on a boat, and I came to Halifax. I got off the boat, and I had a cotton shirt and cotton pants and flip-flops. And I went to the Sally Ann and spent $20 on a Coke. Then I walked up and down Barrington Street, and I saw, it was probably 9 o'clock at night, and I saw guys going in to the building. And I come from Montreal, and I've been to gay clubs many times before. not actively, but been there, done that. And this time I went in and I sat down by myself. And I remember Reg was there, he certainly. And I met Lord Izzard, as he was known then. He's now Larry Izzard, but the same guy. I met him that night, and subsequently spent a month or more with him on and off. So the experience of walking into the church for the first time was a very lively and exciting and, should we say, fruitful? Okay, that's my story.
And it's not Dottigen, it's Barrington.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
I'm still a comfortable way.
Oh, it's hard to shed that, isn't it? 1979?
So with the photos, people, I'm just going to... I do have hundreds of photos that were taken at the turret, but I was not expecting to use them today, so I don't have them collected at the moment. That would take me a while, and so what I have is a few that I managed to grab, plus the images from the person who was going to be presenting today. So what we're going to do is, as you guys tell stories, I will kind of spazzily flip through the slideshow to get to an image that I think is appropriate for you guys, to fit the story as it is. So these are Robin's photos. So the idea of the photos is that they also spawn you guys telling stories. So speak up when you see something if someone else isn't talking. So Robin, these are pictures taken before it was the turret, right?
No, taken. No, it was opened. It opened in 1976. In January, and that's when we first started organizing dances. Lynn, you were probably there that night, weren't you, the first one?
Nope.
No? Okay, I was.
A little late here.
We collected like $20 each, put in some money for buying beer, and I remember taking my turn at the door, collecting money, and it was across the street from the Green Lantern Building, which is where David's Club was, which was open at the time, but not a lot of women went to David's Club. And it also tended to be open late on weekends. And we decided we wanted to organize the Gay Alliance for Equality decided to organize a dance. And the top floor had been a health food restaurant around 1970 called San Paca's. And and you'll notice one of the slides is of the dishes which were left over from San Paca's, those ones. And so the cloth covered lights hanging from the ceiling, those were also, I think, part of the decor for San Paca's. And then San Paca's went under, and I also note that this is wide open. This is since there's since been, you'll see in one of the construction photos that walls are built, but like where those two columns are, that was wide open, and they put some grilling up there, but the air flowed through. That's now been, and that back corner there was known as Lesbian Corner. A lot of women sat back there, and the DJ booth is over on this side. There for a while there was a group called the Youth Employment Society, a couple of guys who organized folk nights and jazz nights and blues nights, trying to get different music things happening and cover a number of bases, but they weren't doing wonderfully well. And so we arranged to rent it for one night to have a dance. And we knew right away that night that something wonderful had happened. And we very quickly went to, let's rent it another night, let's rent it one night a week, let's rent it two nights a week, let's take over the lease. That took about 6 months, I think, in 1976. And we had to get a liquor license as well, our own liquor license, as we took the place over. But the other thing I'll say about the opening night is that you do have photos showing the skylights, and we didn't have a fridge. So the bar was up and back, there was a skylight over. You could climb up the roof on a ladder, and it was winter, it was January, so we kept the beer in the snow on the roof, and we would go up and get the beer there. Yeah, keep going. Oh, you can see one of the skylights. That's one of the skylights over the stairwell, but I think you have one of the skylights over the back room as well. I thought I saw it go up there.
Right.
Yeah. So people would climb up there and get beer and bring it down to the bar, which was nice.
I'm sure the license board knew that.
They really are.
The liquor license board seemed to not mind not knowing a lot of things. When we had a social club license, that shot that you just had, I think, is the... Yeah, that's the beer skylight. They wanted us to... It's a membership club, so you have to sign in members, but as long as a third of the people signed in were members and the rest could be signed in as guests, that was the rough, as I recall, the rough standard. And we had a lot of members or guests named Judy Garland and Mickey Mouse.
Now, we were much more honest... I was at that time seeing Brenda Bryan, who later became a manager of Rumors. And she had not been to the club, and I had been just once, but as a guest and not necessarily a member of the community. So we were going out on a date. And we were going to go to the turret. And we had heard about this. You had to sign in. The liquor license board required it. But we weren't that keen on signing in our true names. So we thought of, you know, the Minnie Mouse alternative. But we decided if we could sign in with our middle name and surname, because our middle name was still legally our name. And so if called upon it, we could say, "We're innocent." So we signed in with our middle names in order to get in. The first time that I was at Rumors, the turret. I apologize, some of you will have heard this story before because I tell it every so often. You may have heard about the jury room protest, and that was an event that happened in
April 1977.
1977! And when jury room, which had been a kind of mecca for the for a good many people in the community, and the staff had no problem with us, but the higher ups, the owners, ordered them to kick out all the gay people. Well, they pretended they didn't know us mostly, but anyway, so it was decided by the small number of people who were then in GAE, I think, to have a protest outside the jury room. And at that time, I identify as bi. And so at that time, I was dating a young prophet, St. Mary's. And Saturday night being date night, and he said, "You know, would you like to go out for a restaurant meal, or we could go to a movie, or what would you like to do?" And I said, "Well, the gay people, those others, you know, are having a protest outside the jury room, and so I'd like to go to the protest." And so we went down to the protest, and somebody had us a picket, and we marched around in a circle in front of the door for a while. And it was very nice of this guy. It's not that he shouldn't have done it, but there were not that many straight men who would go on a picket in support of gay issues, and especially when you were just hired at St. Mary's and you didn't have tenure, and St. Mary's was not the liberal institution that we know and love today. They were pretty anti-gay in those days. So he was taking a chance to be part of the, the march right in front of the offices of the Chronicle Herald, where they then were. So we went and marched around in a circle, and eventually, as it broke up, somebody came over and said, well, we're from the Turret, which is the club, and would you like to come to the club for a drink? And so we did, and that was my first time inside the doors of the Turret. The Chronicle Herald, by the way, had a front page spread the next day. You believe that? You believe anything?
Really?
It took them 3 weeks to notice what had happened right in front of their doors in a very tiny little mention by one of their columnists. And I said to a lesbian friend, I said, he took it. He had a nerve writing us up, didn't he? She said, listen, I know him. He's a good friend of mine. He's a nice guy. It probably took him 3 weeks' persuasion of the management to be allowed to say anything about the protest, which he had said nothing bad, but at least admitted that it had taken place. So.
It was a nice story, you mean?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Nice to be invited to the tour.
Invited, absolutely.
Yeah.
By invitation only, actually.
who negotiated the original liquor license with the province? Do you remember?
Well,
it would have been you.
Well, it wasn't me personally. I mean, it would have been the board, and there also was a tourist management board committee, and I don't think I was. I'm trying to remember. I mean, I had various terms on various boards and committees. I don't think I was directly. I don't have really clear memories of that specific process. So.
Well, they were trailblazers for sure. Because this is what, 1972 when the
76.
76 still. Yeah. That's early.
Yeah.
It was a novel idea, and they were probably writing rules as they went.
I think there was an attitude that, oh, good, they've got a place to go, because we were troublemakers. We were like, we picketed the jury room, and we did it at night during key business hours, which was important.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, it was only it was only our second demo. We picketed CBC in February, which
really?
Was
oh my heavens! So you picketed the CBC, and the issue was
they were refusing to carry public service announcements for controversial organizations like
Talking About Turret. I must confess, at that time, this is almost 50 years ago, I wasn't always, didn't know myself.
Yes.
But I did walk in the front of that building, curious to see because the building was beautiful, but did not quite understand what was going on upstairs in the bar. But I didn't realize that this is the CBC in Halifax at the station.
Yes, but the policy was actually a national policy. We got some of our best coverage from the CBC for our picketing of CBC. It was very embarrassing for them, somebody in CBC upper management decided they should not carry a PSA for our gay line. Now, we did have the number 429-6969. It was very memorable. Gay 6969.
Like
I can remember it. But it got bounced up to national management, and they put forward a general policy not to accept public service announcements here on the station. So the jury room protest was our second demo, but we did do it at night, so we'd interrupt and a lot of people refused to go in. When we pick it up.
Could you tell? I know I'm ignorant a little bit, but what's the jewelry room? What
Carlton, where the Carlton is now. It was a bar.
Okay, in the hotel.
Yeah, right, the actual Carlton bar.
Okay, so you protested
the same bar as the jewelry.
Can you guys stop talking, please? Hello?
Janet. Don't interrupt.
Sorry.
Paul,
so much
do you know where that is now?
Well, I understand where it is, but I don't know Halifax. I know Halifax a little bit.
Argyle Street,
And
yeah.
And when the
right across the street, you have all the bar.
Center. Not so much anymore, but I used to have all of even the seahorse was there for these years.
So was there a particular reason that you protested at that bar?
Because they were refusing to admit gay people.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they were throwing people out.
Yeah. Well, thank you for telling me that.
Yeah. Yeah, refusing to serve, I guess. They didn't actually throw
it away. Yeah, yeah. But they also, because the staff, I think, were not, the staff themselves weren't invested in not serving us, but they could always say they didn't know if we were gay, but we went wearing big yellow buttons saying
that
gay rights
were.
Now. Yeah. And they did, sorry, but they did tell the men that they weren't going to be served, but they were going to serve the women, and then the women protested that not being discriminated, that was discriminatory. That they were being discriminated against in the same way.
I think, Robin, that what that caused, if I correct me if I'm wrong, but is that the jury room sort of lost a lot of clientele as a result, mm-hmm. and the gay, the queer community moved a lot of people to Thackeray's, which was on Spring Garden, which I used to hang out at when I lived downtown.
But they also discriminated at one point.
Did they?
Yes, and they were also, I don't think we picked them, but we had a boycott.
Okay.
So I don't know if this is the article that Lynn was talking about, the little teeny article. It doesn't look like the Chronicle Herald. It looks like it came from somewhere else.
Yeah, there were a couple of alternative papers.
Yeah, it might be.
What? It's not the Gazette.
No, that's right.
During the conference. No, this is very positive. Wouldn't it be nice to have a party there during the conference, which there was a National Gay Rights Conference in Halifax, a big party with dancing and lots of camp. So this is obviously some gay paper.
Well, I think the conference is actually the Atlantic Conference, which happened in the fall of 77, because the National Conference happened in the summer of 78. So it could be the Gazette. Dalhousie Gazette. Yeah.
And there's the CBC.
There's the CBC.
CBC protest.
Marianne Mancini.
Oh, yeah. And right. Debbie Pye.
That's the old
Jim
CBC
McSwain.
Headquarters. They moved since.
That's been torn down. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Why now?
Nice Jim, dear.
That's extraordinary. That is extraordinary. That wasn't that long ago. I did not know that.
Well, more than 50 years.
I went to there.
So I'll tell a story on behalf of Hugo Dan, because he tells a story quite frequently. When Hugo moved to Halifax, he wasn't gay.
All right.
Yeah.
So he said.
No, the water didn't do it. This play did it. This play was called "The Night They Raided Trucks." Trucks. Mm-hmm. It's it's kind of a fictional portrayal of, as I understand it, of bathhouse raids in Montreal.
Bathhouse bar. Sorry.
Bathhouse bar?
No, yeah. A bar,
yeah. But was Trucks a real bar?
Trucks was a bar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is a play, a musical play about this. In the archives, we have some very low-quality recordings of rehearsals of this, of the music.
Oh, really?
And Paul Ledoux also has some video, very low-quality video, which will get digitized at some point, but this is these are all stills from the night they raided Trucks. Hugo was in it. If you see Hugo, point him out because I won't recognize him. And he says that during the production of this, he realized that he was gay.
He is called Hugh rather than Hugo.
Yeah, and so he was hired. He says when he was hired, when he got this job, he was straight and he's now gay. And so you'll recognize some familiar names there.
Where's Hugo?
Sandy Moore is there.
Heard from the body.
Hugo's the fourth.
Hugo's there. Hugh.
John.
Michael Joyce, yes. Okay,
Bill Carr, very familiar name in Halifax. Mm-hmm. Jim McSwain. And Terry Last sounds familiar too, but I can't remember. Okay, over in the thing here, we have Judy Milne. That people who are in Halifax at that time, everyone knew her. She's around. Lynn, I'm not sure if you stay in contact with Judy.
No,
not too much.
Years.
I'm in touch on Facebook.
Okay. Yeah. David Morris. So, and this, of course, is Norval, who I was in a relationship with for 25 years, and all of you know. Paul Ledoux is now a playwright in Montreal.
Oh, very good.
And doing really well. And the...
Tommy Miller.
Tommy Miller, yeah. Sandy Moore still lives in Halifax, I think.
Yes, he does.
And is still doing music.
Can I have Terry Last is the co-author of it, and I believe he may have actually been in trucks. He was arrested in a bar, so it's based partly on his experiences. Paul Ledoux is the playwright, but Terry Last also did some music. I have a 45 recorded that I think called Paralandra. It was a short-lived musical group that he belonged to.
And I see Sakai listed as choreographer.
Yeah.
Sakai was and I don't know what his original name was, but I believe he was a local black man.
Yeah.
And but he was also a Buddhist, and the name Sakai comes from Buddhism.
Yeah. He and I dated at one point.
Have you heard?
No, I don't know. I haven't lost touch a long time ago.
Where's Hugo Dan now? I haven't seen him in years.
He's from Halifax. He's here. Yeah.
He's still here.
Oh, he came to the event in the summer, didn't he? The elders.
He was there.
And just in classic Halifax format, a couple of years ago, Paul and I were at a New Year's levee, and we were talking about old-time stuff in Halifax, and this was in, we were in Windsor, at a straight levee, and I was hanging out with the host was a guy named Terry Pulliam, who's a audio music producer, and I somehow mentioned this, and he said, oh yeah, as a matter of fact, David Hellier will be here later on today at the party. And so I got to meet, he was the guitarist for the thing. But anyway, you can see that this is, it was a big play. It was a big production. It was a big gay production in the 1970s. 1978.
It was the year of the National Conference.
Yeah.
It was during the National Conference.
Okay.
Can I say something else about trucks, which is that it was raided in 77, and it was the largest mass arrest after the War Measures Act. Something like 142 men were arrested, and they were forced to undergo STD testing with, like, Q-tips up their urethras, and which is part of the play. And the Quebec National Assembly met to debate whether to putting sexual orientation in the Human Rights Code, and they passed that law in a midnight session and became the first jurisdiction in North America to protect gay people as a result of the raid on trucks.
I did not know that. That's wonderful history.
So this was certainly the first gay musical or play to be mounted in Halifax. And it must have been one of the first in the country.
Yeah.
So it's really a pretty big deal, and it's very exciting that we have so much stuff here for it, including I have a scan of one of the tickets, I think, somewhere here.
Yeah. Pink triangle tickets.
Robin, you took that picture. This must have been on the stairwell.
Yes, just in the last rise before you turn and go into the club.
And so
back up.
Yep.
Those women sitting there, that's Anne Fulton,
that's
straight out of us.
Yeah, and I think that's Deb Trask lying down.
And Anne Fulton was the only woman, was she, for Simon?
No, what, these memorandum of association?
Yes.
No, it was 8 women and 7 men signed the memorandum of association. She was one of the 8 women.
Who was the bigger skater? Who always hung out there?
Not Chris O'Coin.
Pardon me?
No.
Taller Chris?
No, not Taller Chris.
Rob McCall? No.
Yeah. Rob McCall.
Yeah.
Rob McCall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I know. I think his mother just recently passed away.
Yeah. Well, there's...
he passed away a lot.
You and Hugo and Jim and Robin. Old. And... Lord Izzard, as you mentioned, okay. There.
No, that's Chris.
No, that's Chris.
Chris Shepherd.
Chris Shepherd, of course.
Chris Shepherd.
Hi, Lynn.
Is it me?
That's you.
Looks like me.
Yep, that's you.
When was that taken?
Chris is still. He lives in Toronto.
When was that taken?
That photo of Chris.
Yeah. I think that's.
We were in some kind of panel discussion.
Of the library, 5 years ago, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 2015.
Yeah. All
right. That's 8 years.
I can't remember who provided. I think that might be from Chris's Facebook page. I'm not sure. It looks like it's taken in the late 70s.
It's also very good.
Chris Shepherd was the DJ, the fellow in the projection there at the turret.
Yeah, he's in that book I got.
Chris Jobs was the DJ at one point, but I don't think he was usually the DJ.
Because I recognize the name in the face.
He was manager.
Was he?
Yeah.
There was a photo of him managing the DJ booth at one event, but I don't think it was his usual job. Yeah.
I thought he was manager at one point.
He was just sitting there.
He certainly was in charge.
Yes, he was like the maintenance guy.
Yeah,
he made column for everything. The technical stuff, the carpentry stuff, anything.
Yeah.
How to make his...
They're more conservative side showing up more recently with things like Bill 21 banning the display of religious symbols.
Drinking
milk?
I don't drink it too often.
No, I've been in a few gay bars.
There, that's a great picture.
We were rumors. It was an old theme.
The person supposed to be presenting today, standing on behalf of the current art center, which is
such a nice building.
And my, which most people know is the Kyber Building, which is housed in the Kyber Center. And I've been president of all three societies and nonprofit societies that have been involved with this building, the Turret, and JK Life and Quality. And then I was president of the Kyber Art Center and the Art Society in the late 90s. And then I was first president of the 1588 Barrington Committee.
The guys,
it's a beautiful building.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's very eerie.
I was there.
I met when I walked, when I go to the
third quarter.
I'm Jan. I'm Deb.
Sympathetically and sensitively keeping there's going to be some losses involved inevitably, but the group is going to do as best they can to retain.
I apologize.
Should we have a break here?
A bit of a break we were having.
Reconvene in 10 minutes.
Okay. So, I apologize, Daniel. I mean that people were getting up and just doing other conversations.
They're now using the Interpret Turret Art Center.
Storytelling.
Okay.
We're going to go back to storytelling for a bit.
I'll start the ball rolling. One of the most memorable shows I went to was a man drag show at the Turret. I had never seen a man drag show ever. And I fell in love with the performer, which is stupid.
What do you call
so
a man
good.
Drag? What?
It's a lesbian acting in a butch band
as
way.
A man. Oh, I see.
With a suit, the whole shebang, and the language.
I have to learn these things. I'm so ignorant.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, you're 14.
You too. See me and me West.
Where we fell in love?
Story of well, I was surprised at my own reaction. I was really surprised at my own reaction. I was really convinced. You know, but some people talk to her, and I remember telling somebody. I think she was interviewed, and she said, I'll play with her minds, but I won't play with her hearts. Like, I'm not going to play that game. You know, I'm doing this because I like it. I love it. It's fun. I'm good at it. Anyway, do any of you have any memories of those shows? There were so many shows. Obviously, Trucks was an ambitious undertaking, considering, in a way, the Turret was a fly-by-night organization. Everything was spit and glue all the time.
Oh, yeah.
With all volunteers.
Well, Trucks wasn't really produced by GAE, was it?
No. GAE provided the space for it, and Paul Ledoux and his production crew produced it. I have the sequined red satin sequined jock straps that the actors wear in the last scene in my collection.
Oh, wow. And he's still got it.
I can't say.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. What is the GAU?
Gay Alliance for Equality.
GAU. So, Wayne had a first time I was there story.
Yes. So the first time I was at the Turret, I was a friend of mine. I was living in Truro, and a friend of mine took off to the city, stole some money in Truro, and I was there to buy him. And so someone said, he's at the Turret. And so I'm like, didn't know what it was. So I went up. It was kind of interesting, first time. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, he wasn't there, but I stayed and had a great time.
Right.
And, I met the famous Miss Kitty there as well. Miss Kitty was a drag queen that was very popular in those days. So yes, that was my first experience.
I'm in touch with Keith Dobson I'm in touch with Miss Kitty on Facebook.
Oh, are you really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Really?
Yeah.
It was only the one night, so you know. But it was great.
Robin, is there anyone in the queer community you don't know?
Yeah.
Not many.
Oh yeah, but I don't know who they are.
No. So, Robin, do you have any? Do you know what this is? This. So these are current pictures of the space as it is now before the renovations.
Yes, someone during the Khyber period put up a timeline. And in fact, yes, the photographs that you have from me right there, I didn't take those photographs. I photographed them from the timeline.
Oh.
So they're second generation. I wasn't there for the construction of Wormwoods. You can see Gordon Parsons there in the far right hand side in the middle black and white picture.
Oh yeah.
Sadly, much
much lamented.
Yes. Yeah. I wanted to say just about the things to be aware of about GAE and the turret, which were very remarkable. It's a remarkable organization and a remarkable project because in that period, most gay, quote unquote, organizations in North America were predominantly men. And lesbians organized often through the women's community and feminist organizations or as lesbian organizations. The social spaces, the bars, were in most cases not owned by the gay community. They were owned by straight people and often by organized crime in larger cities. In Halifax, the Gay Alliance for Equality was founded. Its memorandum of association from 1973, which lists the 15 first officers. People listed their full name, their address, their age, and their occupation. And that was like to ask anyone in the queer community to put those things down on a piece of paper in 1973. That was really a risky thing to do because we had no human rights protection. You could lose your job, lose your apartment, lose your children. And 15 people put their names down. 8 of them were women. 7 of them were men. A large number of them lived on Union Street for some reason. I mean, who lives on Union Street?
Oh, there it is.
And also, it was overwhelmingly working class. The so occupations, yeah, there we go. Niels Clausen there is one of the exceptions. He was an academic. But, like, accounting clerk wrote, now, Jim DeYoung, road supervisor, that's interesting because I worked with Jim as a sleeping car porter, and he was the same position. He, I don't know where he got this word road supervisor from. He was basically a porter and bartender on the, and there's teacher, cook, there were people who worked in daycare, people who worked in healthcare. So it was,
you mentioned teacher putting her name to it.
Yeah, yeah, student. And Joyce Gihu, who is Mi'kmaq. You know, and there's Ann Fulton, daycare teacher. So it's remarkable in terms of the men and women working together. It's remarkable in terms of the class basis of it, because most gay organizations were mostly white-collar, middle-class, kind of professional class, like when I went to national conferences, and they were white men of the professional or upper middle class. And so this organization was much more class mixed. It was involved a lot of collaboration, alliance between people of different backgrounds, of different genders, etc. And we fought like hell. And then we went out and did what we had to do. We didn't keep our fighting keep us from doing what we needed to do. And then we came into possession of the most active and profitable gay social space in Atlantic Canada. And it ran for 20 years, and I figured that but conservatively, several million dollars went through the hands of that organization. Yeah, and went in various directions in that, but we provided. I'd have to count sometime what the maximum number was, but we probably had at least a dozen jobs, maybe sometimes 2 dozen jobs that were relied on the Gay Alliance for Equality in various ways. Everything from cleaners to performers to DJs, etc., and bar managers and waiters. And so we had a community-run space run by a nonprofit political organization, a grassroots organization that was class-mixed and gender-mixed in Halifax, Nova Scotia. And I could count on one hand the number of other organizations that I knew of in North America that met those criteria. A model that's much more common in Europe, although there they tend to have national organizations like in Holland and in Denmark or in Norway, where you'll have the local chapter of the organization will run a space. But here it was a standalone organization that had those characteristics.
Interesting.
And we sent delegates, like we went to the 1977 National Conference of Saskatoon. There were 6 of us went together. And I don't remember how much was paid for by GAE, but I mean, I think a certain amount of it would have had to have been, like our transportation. And when we were in Saskatoon, I recently saw a diary entry from a friend of mine there, Gerald Hannon, who was saying people were laughing because the Halifax delegates were looking at the menu for the luncheon, saying, well, what's the cheapest thing so we can afford to eat it? But most of the other delegates there had paid their own way. Our way had been paid by our organization. So we were a poor community, but we had a wealthy organization.
So this is kind of funny. In 1987, when we moved, there was a search for the new name for the bar. And so this always happens when you ask a bunch of people to suggest names.
Hundreds of names.
Well, and most of them are rude, inappropriate, and quite funny.
Come in and see homosexuals. That's good.
Read some of them up. We can't read them all.
26, sneakers. 27, backstage. 28, guys and dolls. 29, fruits are us. 30, wild Oscars. 31, tete-a-tete. 32, just chick. 34, four season. Peculiar.
Yeah.
Apricots, flaming pink.
1 put clubby the club
pansy
face.
Pansy palace.
Pansy palace.
Number 20. That's a good one.
So I don't think we voted on the
fact. I say amigos.
Rumors.
Oh, I think the board kind of decided, didn't they?
I see a lot of French names there. What's up with this? La Vie en Rose.
There you go.
Rose.
Club Rouge.
Yeah. Le Vendée.
Pissoule.
Sorry about that.
Tommy Miller is the signing as the secretary there for the...
Union Street 3161. That one I gave you there.
Tommy Miller was the leading drag mother in Halifax, for those who may not have known him.
Oh, okay.
And sadly died about a year ago?
Maybe about a year?
Recently.
Recently, yeah.
Okay, next.
So I went through the finger hole, didn't you?
Here's a schedule from 1978.
The Voice.
Yeah. So what can we see here? You can read lots between the lines. Gay Christian meeting in 1978. So to me, one of the cool things was owning our space like this allowed all kinds of stuff to happen. If someone had a good idea, there was space available. And because we owned the bar, and when it was run more, as Robin said, run more or less competently, the thing just hemorrhaged cash. So, which meant that there was money for all kinds of stuff. Very shortly after the creation of GAE in 1972, there was a gay line run, brought up in late 1972, I think, and it ran for 40 years. Baron here was one of the last people to sign the logbook. I volunteered at it for many years, and we each worked two, usually three-hour shifts, right, from 7 to 10?
Yeah.
2 3-hour shifts per month.
Now, that was no secured space, was it?
It was in a whole variety of spaces, but very often JE paid for the phone line. Paid for the phone. And then after JE didn't exist anymore, we got sponsorship from a couple of bars to pay for it. But then the internet came along, and we didn't need it. So, gay Christian meeting. Free play jukebox. That's kind of a fun idea. Committee meetings. Disco. 8:30, 8 o'clock to 3 in the morning.
$2 for entry and $3 for guests.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's good back then, yeah.
Disco, that would be a good time.
How about the Resurrection? When was it when we went there? When your problem was away?
Resurrect, that was the 2013.
Yeah.
I was up here dancing up a storm, guys.
Okay, so mentioned Tommy Miller. So Jim DeYoung, whose name you've seen a few times, really liked taking photos at the turret, and so we have thousands. I would guess we have 2,000 or 3,000 photos of drag queens at the turret, and several hundred of Tommy Miller. So we've picked a few of the best ones here. Passed in 2020.
79.
Yeah. That's the one we went to make? No.
And as Robin mentioned, the turret ashtrays.
Can I mention the drawing behind? That's from one of the programs for the San Pacas restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
One of the menus.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so the a vegetarian restaurant was in that space and probably just went out of business and just left everything there. And so these things were used for, obviously these were serving bowls, used as ashtrays and snack bowls, and I think many of them migrated to people's houses.
They're pretty. So
probably a few around.
Yeah, pretty though.
Very pretty.
Yeah.
You still have any of them?
There was a membership card.
That expired 31 years ago.
41 years ago.
Any other stories?
Can I tell a story? When I worked on the railroad for 10 years as a sleeping car porter from 1975 to 1985, and one of my friends I met on the railroad was one of the first women hired. I'd like to point out, when I started in 75, it was only 12 years after it was desegregated by race and only 6 months after they started hiring women. But my friend Jeanette started in that first, that's me in 1975 at a gay conference in Ottawa. Jeanette was in the process of a breakup of a marriage to a conservative Lebanese Catholic named Tufi, a Tufik Arab. And at one point I was on the door, I was staffing the door at the turret, and Jeanette was in the turret dancing, and Tufik showed up at the door demanding to see his wife. That was a tense evening. It's Bob Petit in the middle with Sven Robinson.
Yeah. And
is that me?
That's you.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
Which one? Looks like he has a clear
playing the green.
I'm on the left.
He does. Bob Petit was a clergyman.
Yeah, he was the priest at the Round Church at St. George's.
Yeah.
So we presented Sven with, this is before Sven was out, so we had created an award called the Lavender Diesel, which was a little truck painted lavender and mounted as like a board with a little brass plaque, and it was for service above and beyond the call of liberalism. And we gave one to Ingrid Jenkner, the director, curator at Mount Sinai University Art Gallery, because she'd been very queer supportive. And we gave one to Sven at this point for his action on queer rights.
Should we wrap it up, Bear?
Yeah. I guess we'll just spend the rest of the time just eating and talking.
Yeah. So we'll switch to social time.
Yeah, we'll switch to social time.
Awesome. And if I'm lucky, I'll find another piece of slideshow to put up as a slideshow. But please, people, fill your plates again.
Mm-hmm. So, have you been recording all this?
Yeah. That's that device there, which, if I'm lucky, has a solid red light on it, which it does.
Yeah.
That's an interesting photograph. Who is the person in the center, or do you know?
That's Bob Petit.
Father. Oh, that's right, he was a Catholic priest.
No, he was an Anglican priest.
Oh.
And so this is before he came out, this photograph?
Before Sven Robinson came out, and, Bob Petit, I don't know, I mean, the Bob Petit was sort of outed and driven out of his job.
So Sven is with the red tie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's me on the other end.
Oh, that's you. Okay.
Yeah, one with green.
Sorry, I didn't realize that. Yeah.
There's Bob Petit with Princess Diana.